This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. That is not Benny King and the Drifters. Believe it or not, that is the man who at the time was known as Cassius Clay. Yeah. That was after he beat Sonny Liston in 1964 to become the world champion, but before he had officially changed his name to Muhammad Ali, somebody got him into a studio and had him record Stand By Me. I'm playing that today because my next guest is the director and producer of a terrific new documentary called The Trials of Muhammad Ali that'll air Monday night on PBS as part of their Independent Lens series. Bill Siegel, welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you very much for having me on. That was a wonderful clip you played. That's not in the film.
Oh, no, it's not. And I thought of it as I was watching the movie, and I wondered if you included it in there, because there is an extended portion of the movie where you focus on, after Ali became Muhammad Ali, how much he took it out on people who still insisted on calling him Cassius Clay, including his opponents, right?
Yes. You know, the film doesn't focus on his boxing per se, except for the fights that had a political dimension to them, like the Floyd Patterson and Ernie Terrell fights, where both of those guys refused to call out Ali by his new name, and exactly as you say, he made him pay for it.
He actually taunted them in the ring. What's my name? What's my name?
Yeah. Bob Dylan, John Wayne, lots of people have changed their names, but Ali got a lot of blowback for his decision, and he'd been introduced to the world as Cassius Clay. He'd already established himself as a force to be reckoned with, and when he announced that he was a Muslim and had taken a new name, Muhammad Ali, a lot of people just would not accept it.
You talk a lot in the movie, or you show a lot in the movie, about Ali's religious conversion to the Nation of Islam, at a time, by the way, when most Americans didn't know anything about Islam or being a Muslim. Now, of course, there's a different connotation to it in our post-9/11 world. What did it mean in the 60s when Ali did that?
It depends on what corner of the ring you were in. You know, some people were inspired by it and decided to join the movement that they'd heard from through Ali. Other people, of course, many were already in the Nation of Islam, and for them he became a hero from within the movement. But for many beyond it, in mainstream, particularly white America, they felt threatened by it or challenged by it, certainly. They saw it as a tremendous expression of defiance and, a refusal on Ali's part to, quote-unquote, behave the way that mainstream America had come to expect their heavyweight champions to behave, especially if they were black.
Yeah. I think a lot of white people were also freaked out by this guy who they may have admired as the heavyweight champion, but he's going around the country and, in fact, the world saying the white man is the devil.
Right. The Nation of Islam under Elijah Muhammad had a very orthodox view of racial separation. They wanted to be left alone, as Khalilah Camacho Ali, Ali's wife at the time that the film focuses on. She was born into the Nation of Islam, and as she says, they were a nation within a nation, which is this nation. So it's complicated, and the Nation of Islam was not rebelling in the sense, they weren't like the Black Panthers, they weren't endorsing armed struggle, they were endorsing self-help, self-empowerment, and that's what they were about.
And in fact, separatism.
Yes, which is different than segregation, of course. They wanted their own territory, they wanted to be left alone.
What I found ironic about that from watching your documentary, Bill, is that Ali may not have become as big as he was if it were not for a little more than a dozen white guys in his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, there's so much out there in the world about Muhammad Ali, and yet I felt like there was still an important story to be told about how he became Muhammad Ali and his life outside the ring. And the Louisville sponsoring group, the guys that you're mentioning, are an example of a really underappreciated part of Ali's life. They launched then Cassius Clay's pro career. They were a syndicate of 11 white millionaires out of Louisville, out of media and bourbon and horses and manufacturing, and they were very fair in their contractual dealings with Ali, and he honored it all the way to the end of the six-year term, and then had the Nation of Islam take over his career from there.
How did they feel about the white man is the devil thing?
Well, you know, that started to come out toward the end of their time with Ali, and really at the same time that he was refusing to go to war in Vietnam. And so, you know, there were some members who definitely did not want to renew the contract, and yet they still parted amicably. But, you know, when they first discovered him, he was Olympic gold medal winning hometown hero Cassius Clay, and these millionaires were used to getting their way, and they figured they were just going to ride this kid all the way to the heavyweight championship, which they did.
Yep.
But along the way, had their minds blown and really, I think, own worldview challenged by as they watched this prodigy become himself, become Muhammad Ali.
He obviously turned himself into what the world knew as the most visible and recognizable human being on the planet. But how responsible are those guys are for creating what became the Muhammad Ali image?
You know, they gave him his first real break in terms of tremendous support launching his pro career. But Ali, or then Cassius Clay, was very good at hyping his own gate. He kind of took a page out of Gorgeous George's professional wrestling handbook. He understood the theatrical aspect of getting people to come to the fights, and that was not the sponsoring group, that was him. But they you know, structured their deal with him so that he was able to just focus on his boxing, and of course that made a huge difference.
The documentary is called The Trials of Muhammad Ali, and one of them, of course, was the one that went all the way to the Supreme Court, that having to do with his induction as a draftee during the Vietnam War. He did not want to go because of his religious beliefs. And there must have been huge concern at the time that if Ali won his case, there would be a lot of other Americans, black and white, who would say, you know what, if Ali's not going, I'm not going.
Yeah, you know, I think that Ali's stance, as it was, inspired a lot of people to reconsider their own position on the war. And, you know, I don't think he set out to be an activist. He was representing himself, but that role was kind of thrust upon him. And when he was in exile, you know, after the government convicted him of draft evasion, sentenced him to 5 years in prison, they took his passport away, so he couldn't leave the country. Meanwhile, boxing authorities stripped him of his title and banned him from boxing, so he couldn't fight in the States. So as the film shows, he made a living largely by touring the country and became a public speaker and spoke out against the war and against racism. His refusal was early in the anti-Vietnam War movement. So initially, he got a lot of flack, a lot of heat from the college students on campus. But during that time, popular opinion begins to turn against the war, and Ali realizes he's got a lot of allies on those campuses, and he becomes kind of a countercultural hero.
How was he viewed then, and I guess more recently, or maybe in the intervening decades, by Vietnam veterans?
You know, again, there was no monolithic response from veterans. Some were vehemently opposed. You know, a lot of people, veteran or not, called him a draft dodger. The film shows Jackie Robinson and Joe Louis, prominent black athletes of the generation before Ali, opposing his stance. And you know, there's also a black veteran interviewed in the film who supports Ali's stand. So again, it depends on what corner of the ring you're in. I think overall, it's hard to remember. Youngsters, I think, don't know at all this Muhammad Ali, this defiant, righteous guy who took a truly moral stand on principle and gave up everything. You know, when he refused induction, he assumed he was never going to box again, and he was ready and willing to give it all up, and he did. And the fact that he was able to return to the ring and became the Muhammad Ali we know today, to me, says more about us than it does about Ali. And that's really one of the main goals of the film, is to have people think about our collective response to Ali and how it evolved over time.
What's his life like now?
He has Parkinson's. So he's you know, he wasn't able to do a productive on-camera interview for the film. He has lost much of his powers of articulation, but he can track entirely. I showed him a fine cut of the film in October of 2012. I wanted him to see it before it was released, and I could tell that he was tracking it entirely. He knew everything that was going on and was really digging it, which was a thrill for me.
I'm sure.
Not difficult to say, because I also know that Muhammad Ali likes nothing more than to watch stuff about Muhammad Ali.
The Trials of Muhammad Ali airs Monday night on the Independent Lens series on PBS. Bill Siegel, the director and producer, thanks for your time today.
Thanks very much for having me on.
America Weekend.